Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of Simcast. I just said yet another, like it's a bad thing. It's okay, you're all still listening. I know you're out there. I'm Matt Hunter, and alongside me, as ever, is Mr. Steve Wilkerson. Hello, Steve.
Hello, hello.
On How a scale, less moist than I have been over the last 3.5 years, it feels, thankfully.
Nice. It's drying out, isn't it?
It's dry. The irony is not lost on me that we are praising the fact that it is in fact now dry, and we're about to talk about how rain is a big feature in a sim racing title.
That is true. How the turns of tables.
exactly that. I better check it's March now, isn't it? It is the 7th of March in the year of our Emperor 2024. Otherwise known as
1800 24 M3,
and for those of you who are Star Trek leaning, that is Stardate 76645.1. That's not a William Shatner. That's just me being, yeah. And we have a special guest who's just had to. He's probably rolling his eyes in disgust at the level of nerdiness that was. Friend of the show and. Well, I'm going to say Castle Coombe commentator extraordinaire, plus everywhere else as well. Mr. Chris Dawes is back. Hello, Chris.
Good evening, people. I wasn't sure what to make of all of that, but hey, it's good to be back with you guys.
It has been a little while. How is life treating you, sir?
Yeah, good, thank you. Very, very busy, to say the least, and that's before we even start the season. Obviously, we're into March now, as you said, and that means that... The commentary schedule and whatnot starts ramping back up again. My winter hibernation is now over. Not that that is much of a hibernation. It just means that my wife and daughter actually get to see me on weekends, but I've still got all my business interests that keep me swamped during the week. So I've got to go back to working 7 day weeks again soon. So, hey, let's see. I just got to make sure that I don't have the heart scare that I had last year again this year. That's my aim.
That would be very nice if you didn't scare the hell out of all of us. Yes, that would be rather good.
It wasn't pleasant, I'm not going to lie. It was rather freaky, but I'm still here to take the mickey out of myself about it, so that's all good.
It's not advised, ladies and gentlemen. It's not advised.
No.
You're here. Let's do some shameless plugs. Let's talk about some of those bits, because obviously you've got Open Doors Training, which you plug across social media. Let's show our listeners what that's all about, because I have a fake idea.
That really came after I was suddenly became very busy with all the commentary and awards night hosting and things like that, which is Chris Dawes comms, if you will, and voiceover artist. And suddenly I realised how it was ridiculous that I was making a living from the thing that used to scare me the most. At university, I used to be paralysed by fear when we did presentations and things like that. And I'm a recognised anxiety sufferer, ironically, with everything that I do. And I sort of went, do you know what? I want to help other people. And Open Doors Training, and that's with my surname, Dawes, is public speaking, presentation skills and media training, and general communication training, actually. It's sort of branched out into, because it can help you open doors that you probably didn't even know exist, like I did with suddenly breaking into the commentary world and everything that came as a result of that. So, yeah, that's the Open Doors Training one. And the more recent recent company that I decided I obviously wasn't busy enough is called Visual PR, which is basically live online video broadcasts, fully branded to clients, so that they have interactive content every month, and then all of the social clips and everything we create out of that afterwards as well. So it sort of sits between PR and marketing and brings their knowledge and their people to life. So it, all of it sort of interlinked with I either talk for a living, help others talk for a living, or provide a platform for people to talk. That kind of sums it up, really. Or as my wife says, I talk rubbish for a living. That was the cleaned up version, by the way.
I'm not going to lie, I get a very pretty similar response here, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think my responsible adult is just happy to have an hour's worth of peace every couple of weeks.
Yes, I think that's why my wife and daughter are glad that the motor racing season is about to start again, because they get their peaceful weekends back again now.
As I say, you say the season's upon us, but you have been a little busy with some esports stuff, which we will just touch on in a minute. But obviously, we both share a mutual love of a certain, I'm not going to say Southwest because it's not, but West Country Circuit, Castlecombe,
yep.
just up the road from me and just down the road from you. Season starting on the 1st of April with Howard's Race Day, I believe. I know there's an open day before that, but that's the first big one, isn't it?
It is, yeah, you're right. A week on Saturday, we got the media day where everything's launched and spectators are allowed this year, which is cool. And I should be doing a live broadcast from there on the Castlecombe platforms, which will be cool. And then, yeah, Easter Monday, the 1st of April, we'll be having Howard's Day. And it is the 500th race day at Castlecombe Circuit.
I love that.
And so we've got the 500s race in there with us because it just had to be done, didn't it?
But that is
Formula 500s. I know, it's brilliant, isn't it?
For a circuit that for anyone who knows, for the longest time has had a interesting relationship with the neighbourhood around by, to get to 500 metres, and it's obviously over 60 years, but 500 base metres, that's a hell of a landmark.
It is. I mean, I think the stat is that Coombe opened only 18 months after Silverstone, for example. So it is one of the longest established. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you say, for example, having the interesting / challenging relationship with the neighbours. You have to say there's places have had it considerably worse, and because the team really try to manage it and keep the peace and be mindful of what is right, what is wrong. Etc. etc. And so it's created that longevity, and I think that's a valuable lesson for all of us. Communication is key.
Yeah, 100%. It's always, I mean, you know, from my other sort of sporting world with rugby as well. You know, we know how key it is to be have a great relationship with your neighbours, and mutual respect is definitely part of that.
I've got to ask you about that, because obviously because that's Exeter, isn't it, that you're
correct. Yes.
And obviously the whopping great stadium that grows as a complex with a hotel next to it and everything now, right on the edge of the motorway. Has a ball ever gone over to the motorway?
Do you know, I joke about it on a fairly regular basis. To my knowledge, no.
I've gone very off topic there, but since you're an addict to that, I thought, you know what, I'm intrigued to ask, because I drive down there. My in-laws live down in Cornwall, so we go down there quite a bit, and I've always been intrigued.
Do you know, that is a question I'm going to have to put to also a friend of the show, Don Armand. Next time I speak to him, he might have to reach out.
I'd imagine the answer's no, because I'm pretty sure we'd hear about it, wouldn't we?
I'm pretty sure there's netting on the other side of it, but are the only sort of people I could think who could possibly even do that sort of distance would probably be Henry Slade, I imagine, these days, or someone who just catches the wind a certain way. Who knows? Probably more of a so for those who don't know, Sandy Park is right on, as Chris just said, right on the edge of the M5, at junction 29 on the outskirts of Exeter, literally backs onto the motorway, the east grandstand, which recently was heavily modernized and updated, and a whole extra tier has been added on top of it.
You've
I haven't seen that, I don't think.
I might not have noticed it.
It's a lot taller than once it was. Back in the day, so that it used to be called the library. It was all standing terrace the longest time. The irony that's called the library, it was definitely the loudest stand. All the core fans go there. But they've added a quite a substantial section of seating on top of it now, which puts it the same height as the main west stand, which is all the Hoy and Polloi go.
This is just easy for you to say.
See,
I've got to say, Steve, that we thought that the problem was going to be the Crofts talk, but I decided I was going to corrupt it in a whole other direction.
No. I mean, you've set him off now. You've set him off with Exeter.
The short answer is no, but I am going to.
There was no short answer there, Matt.
No. But I am going to reach out to a mutual friend and see if we can't find out if it has that. I can't imagine it has, but it would be hilarious to find out if it actually
now,
has that.
Matt. I had to Google Map this just now to see if how close you were actually to the M5.
You are literally on it.
Yeah.
It is junction 30. It's not 29.
29 and 30 are literally right next to each other. 29 and 30 are literally right next to each other.
Yeah, 29 means you're going on the A303. 30 means you're going into Exeter.
Yeah, listener in America, this is high interstate talk in the southwest of Great Britain.
They'll be doing what Steve's just done. They'll be jumping on Google Maps now as well.
I mean, I genuinely thought, I was like, oh, it can't be that close. Yeah, there must be a little bit of gap. Oh, no, it is literally the slip road is parking.
What do you think the first thing I flew over in Flight Simulator was when it came out?
Took
off from Exeter Airport, flew over Sandy Park.
We lead very different lives, Matt.
We do. It's true.
You don't call a simcast for nothing. It's like flight sim, train sim.
Yeah, no.
This is where I admit that I've done train sim. Then is it?
You get. I mean, same here. I have the West Somerset Railway for train sim. I just wish I could work it a bit easier, but you know,
it's not easy, is it?
It's not easy.
Especially if you've got a gap between using it, because then you forget everything you're supposed to do.
100%. And the fact that the developer is almost as bad as EA in basically producing new titles year on year, and all the much money that you've spent on mods, you're kind of like, how much of this is actually going to be usable in the new? Please make it most of them.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the sim racing portion. Ostensibly, it's a sim racing. Actually, no, I am going to go back to Castlecombe because Castlecombe's important. Obviously, we just mentioned Howard's Day, the 500th meeting on the 1st of April. What other stats? It's a Castlecombe is pretty good for its variety. You know, it's renowned for obviously its rally day as well towards the tail end of the year,
which is two days this year.
Two whole days of rallying awesomeness. Mm.
And I think they're even doing now. I don't know what the translation is on this. There is an actual rally stage where they are going to contest something. Now, I'm not sure whether that's actually a round of anything. I don't think it is yet. Maybe building towards that, but it is, as I understand it, building it as a competition, if you will, for on the weekend.
Nice. They'll have the BRC. They'll have the BRC knocking on your door at some point. Then.
Yeah, you never know.
That'd be quite nice. I love that it's the British Rally Championship, and I'm pretty certain they don't come anywhere near the southwest. So how could it be a British Rally Championship? They don't even do the stages, the Breen stages anymore, I don't think, do they?
Don't know. Not sure. It's all in a mess, isn't it?
Yeah. This again, sorry, dear listeners, but this is what happens. You listen to this show, you don't get sim racing. You do get sim racing content. It was interspersed with interesting chat. So when I used to live in Weston-super-Mare, one of the families that live behind us had two or three Imprezas, and they used to compete in the Breen stages and other bits and bobs all the time. So I know about the Breen stages, but yeah, not that. I'd like some rallying down here. It'd be fun. It's not like there's a shortage of decent roads to do it in our area, let's face it.
Well, fingers crossed, it seems to be having a little bit of a resurgence, doesn't it, where they're allowing it back where they'd stopped it previously and things like that. So, fingers crossed. Saying that, I'd still also like them to bring back the Birmingham Super Prix as well, but that's another story altogether.
Adrian Michael Reese, if you're listening, you have another supporter.
I genuinely wish I could have witnessed the Birmingham Super Prix.
It was amazing.
And the other thing I've always wanted to go to, and if they bring it back, because I think they stopped it, is the meeting at Oliver's Mount as well, in Scarborough way, like the motorbikes that go along on the whatever. They stopped that because that was like apparently too dangerous. Apparently, a street circuit / like racing circuit is too dangerous.
Sweet.
But yeah, apparently.
I mean. Fair enough. So of the awesome calendar that's coming up at Castlegrim, what else is standing out for you this year? What should people be looking out for, do you reckon?
Well, obviously, all of it, definitely, without question, yes. We've got modified Fords are making an appearance this year at Coombe, and if anybody's not seen that, I can assure you, it's one of the biggest grids of the most bonkers cars. You know, it is just phenomenal. I can't wait to see them. I can't remember exactly which meet that one's on without looking in more detail, but we've got the Rally Day, as I say, is now Rally Day XL, 28th and 29th of September, over 2 days. But the weekend before that, would you believe, the Autumn Classic is going 2 days as well. And that is an awesome race weekend where they sort of encourage you to dress up in period clothing and everything as well. Nice. You've got like multi-million pound cars on show and multi-million pound cars racing as well in bumper grids, race hard. And even though it's 2 days instead of one this year, apparently so many people, so many championships and series wanted to race in it that we could have made that easily a 3 day event and still fill it up. Just going to be epic. So that one I'm really looking forward to. And of course you've got all the action days, which you know, is certain people's beef, other people's poison, but you know, you've got people taking their souped up cars to either display or track, etc. So we've got a whole load of those as well, including the German Action Day this year, as well as the usual ones. And we've got the Motorcycle National on the 27th, 28th of July as well.
I was just going to say, don't, dear listener, don't think that Coombe is just a four wheels only affair. It is available for two wheels. I've yet to experience two wheels at Coombe, but I
can't. Oh, you have to do it. I know. It's amazing.
Given the action that you get with four wheels, I could assume two is going to be even better around that.
What you think of the craziness of it is that the Bybrook chicane is introduced just before they get to Camp Corner for the bikes, mm-hmm. because they realise that between Bobby's, the second of the two chicanes, yeah. and Camp Corner, they're back up to full speed again. And so they had to slow them down before they arrived at camp. So it just gives you an indication of just how incredible the bikes are around that circuit.
That's going to be awesome. That's a definitely to get to event this year. And I am going to stick with Coombe slightly more, because this is another little bit of iRacing news that cropped up in and around. It'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on it, was that they announced in the middle of a very big missive about everything, all the updates that were coming up, that they're coming over to the UK to scan two previously unvisited circuits. Lots of people saying, that'll be Thruxton then, or that'll be Croft. I really hope that Coombe gets scanned. That would be epic, wouldn't it?
It really would, and I mean, you know, I think we're getting slightly closer to that, because my race lab, that is one of these onboard analytics, slightly more affordable to the club racer analytics, and they've mapped it so that it kind of exists in a way. And obviously these guys take it to a whole new level, and it would be absolutely brilliant. You know, I think there is an appetite now there from Coombe. I don't know whether it's the right phrase to say allow it to happen. I don't know, because I guess it's got to be a two-way agreement that it's going to happen at all. And I believe that there is much more of an appetite for it, that they've understood, oh yeah, there is a reason and a place for that. You know, it used to exist back in, what was it, Toker 2 or whatever the hell it was, and it was there. So it would be nice to have it up to date and present. My only concern is picking up on that, where you say, for example, Thruxton and Croft. Well, those two are obviously bark linked, so that there is a link between the two that suggests if it's only two, my concern is, not concern as in with my biased Coombe hat on, Castle Coombe hat on, is that you kind of go, it's probably those two, isn't it?
I mean, I would argue that, well, Thruxton and Croft have had their fun with the BTCC DLC on R-Factor 2. I think it's time to give some other circuits a go now.
Absolutely.
And again, also, without my biased Castle Coombe hat on, I know it's an incredible circuit, you know it's an incredible circuit, and there is actually a very good, I don't know how they've scanned it, but there is a very good version of it available for a set of Corsa that somebody's done, which I love going around in Super Tourers and F1.
Yeah, because I've commentated on that, and I will be a week on Sunday. In presumably it's that because I did the Caterham series back in lockdown, and nice. the Coupe Cup their final round of this particular series one is round Castle Coombe, and they're going to be going round, and I'm going to be absolutely like a kid in a sweet shop, you know. It's my home circuit, and wicked, this looks so good on there, and I'll go, oh yeah, look, the ice cream van's in the right place.
The thing is, though, you say that, and for me, stuff like that makes a big difference. You know, it's funny when you sort of go around various iterations of Silverstone on, you know, sim titles that have got quite a substantial budget, and there's a grandstand missing, or some stuff that's been changed for 8 years hasn't been changed. I'm looking at you, Forza.
Although, let me jump in with one, and I think you were watching this, were you not, on Sunday, and we were at Snetterton for the Coupe Cup e-race, and they've still got Scary Tree there, but I love that. I love that Scary Tree's still there.
This is the other thing that I love about sim racing, is that iconic things like that will forever be maintained in the virtual space. There's, you know, this big circuit, there's circuits in America, quite historic circuits. I can't remember off the top of my head.
VIR with the massive oak tree in VIR.
So that's gone. But there's circuits in like the Midwest that don't exist anymore. They're now shopping malls stuff like that. You know, and like some of the really historic circuits like Reims and places like that, you can race incredible iterations of them. People have done such incredible work. Chris Hayes. If you go and look at him on YouTube, dear listeners, there's some amazing videos on some of the old historic circuits that are, you know, there for posterity in various sim racing titles. And, you know, all three of us here, we're all petrol heads. We all hope and pray that motorsport stays around in one form or another, you know, for all of our lifetimes and beyond. And the circuits that we know and love do as well. But, you know, things change, sadly. And things, you know, sometimes circuits will be lost. And if we have them forever, you know, on sim racing.
Immortalized, exactly.
Yeah. It's like a interactive museum, one might say.
Absolutely.
And how you can't go crashing a Brontosaurus in a virtual museum, but you can drive a Tyrannosaurus Rex around Brands Hatch. I've seen it done. Genuine video. So, well, let's talk then about the E Coupe Cup, because so I sort of literally fell on this, but tripped over this one when I saw one of your posts about it that you were commentating on. It was like, this looks interesting, because I had a coupe, albeit not a racing one, so automatically I'm in there. The action's awesome. Tell us about the series, how it's going.
It really is. I mean, these guys, I commentate on their real world series. It's a series rather than a championship, but and they just sort of spoke to me at the Autosport show up at the NEC at the beginning of this year, saying that they kind of liked the way that I, as you know, Matt, my style is I like to have a good laugh and I like to interact and entertain and all of that as well. And they kind of went, that's what we kind of need for this. Can we encourage you to come and do this? And I was like, well, why not? And the whole idea of this is that someone has actually designed the liveries for the whole fleet of cars to match the fleet of cars that have been competing in the series as well. Now, it doesn't mean it's actually the drivers in the series, that I don't think any of them are actually racing in this because they don't know how to do it. They don't have rigs or whatever, but that you choose which car you're in. And so it's great that we've got these out there, and it really is trying to promote this series. And I mean, it's such a cool, fun series, the OT Publishing Coupe Cup with Toyo Tires to give its full name. Was off the top of my head that as well. Just tell I've said that a few times.
I mean, that's a yeah, get on. It's not.
It gets ingrained.
I am also going to say it's awesome to have a series that that is actually short enough to remember. I'm looking at you, SRO.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just their attitude. John Winter, the boss man for there, is that he's like, look, you on a race weekend, you spend more time in the paddock than you do on circuit, so they make sure it's really good fun for everybody and inclusive in the paddock as well. And they're really trying to make sure it's not checkbook racing. You can pick up. I saw one advertised the other day: a race prepared car, fully ready to go, $3,500. And you then enter this series that, again, a series means you don't necessarily have to commit to every single round if you don't want to. But they've got this thing. Now, what was the figure? It's something like if someone turns to you and says, I want to buy your engine off you for £500. I'm pretty sure the figure is £500. You have to let them buy it off you for £500. So if you've been stupid enough to go and spend £10,000 getting this thing tuned, you've just lost £9,500. So what it does, no one's ever done this, but it stops you going and spending money tuning your engine because it will get bought off you for £500 if you've gone and done something stupid to it. And I like that. And so they've decided that, look, we want to broadcast this this e-series of it. And it's totally free for the drivers at the moment, but I think there's an evolution they're hoping to sort of grow with this as a championship. And they sort of copy what they're doing for their rounds. And honest to God, the quality of some of the drivers on this thing is out of this world. And in fact, the guy that is just romping away with this series at the moment, some of the teams that run a few cars, they're going, Nathan, come get this guy down to the media day or the launch day, the test day that they're doing on Monday at Brands Hatch, and we'll put him in a car because this guy is so good on the sim. We want to see if he can do it in the real world as well. So it's an interesting one. And as you said, Matt, is that you tune in and clock this, and there's just fights going on throughout the entire field that I'm there commentating on it, and I do not have to enforce my enthusiasm and excitement. It just grabs you by the you-know-whats and just provides this entertainment. And there sits something that I really enjoy about occasionally jumping into the sim commentary, is that unlike in the real world where I'm stuck in a commentary box and I have a set view, if I'm lucky, I might have some CCTV cameras, and that is literally it. That's the quality of them, to maybe see some of the other parts, which means you can't see clearly. As you know, with the sim racing, I'm following whatever I want to follow, and I can jump. I can suddenly see on the timing tree, hang on a minute, there's some swapping going on here. Let's jump back to that bit. So the next thing, I'm jumping back to there, and I'm picking up whatever action I want to. And therefore always bringing you the most exciting action to the commentary. And I just think it's brilliant. I have so much fun doing it.
I think, like you said, it is awesome that they sort of embrace the esports side of it as well, to sort of as like an extra way to promote the real world stuff and potentially get, you know, source a new talent to get involved in the series.
Exactly.
We had Motorsport UK on towards the tail end of last year. There's a lot of stuff coming up for that. We're now seeing, you know, the British GT are doing an official series again, which is awesome. You know, something we're not strangers to here. 750 MC, they're doing it as well. I think people are finally realizing that actually sim racing is a pretty cool way of showing off your series.
Yep. I agree.
And of course, it's also a pretty fun way of doing some extra commentary as well, I imagine.
Yeah, it's something that I really do enjoy, especially as I found there's a future in drinking gin whilst you're commentating, which I don't normally get to do. There is, honestly. It gives a whole other dimension to the commentary after a while. But, you know, I try to be fair, is that I've obviously come from initially, I've been very lucky, is that I've broken into the real world commentary that sees me just flat out with that. And it feels wrong to suddenly, because a lot of people use the sim commentary as a sort of way to master their trade and try to get into the real world of the comms. And it's like, well, doesn't that make me an arse if I sort of go and do too much the other way? It's like, I want these youngsters to have the opportunity to sort of give it a go, practice it, and, you know, and I've worked with and helped nurture a few that have come into the real world as well. And so I try not to do too much of it out of respect, but I got to be honest, when I do, I absolutely love it. It's so much fun.
And I think that's the other thing, isn't it? I think there's a lot of focus on, you know, with sim racing, there's a lot of focus on the behind the wheel stuff. But, you know, from my Toro days, and Steve will obviously, agree with me here, there's so much more to it than that. You know, it is the engineering, it is the team management, it's the promotion, it's commentary.
Oh, yes.
It's the production. The production values of some of these sim racing series is on par, and in some cases surpasses.
Yep.
Some real world stuff simply because of what you're able to do, you know.
Agreed.
And you sort of see, I mean, I think it's probably thanks to the existence of drones, but you see like some of the shots that you get in F1 and stuff now have to be, well, they not just have to be, they are entirely inspired by what we've been seeing in games for years.
Yeah, which is ironic, isn't it, where we used to kind of go to a game, oh my god, that looks like the real world, whereas you kind of now start thinking of some of them the other way round. I think I did it on a previous show a few years ago when I came in with you, mate, and said, look, I will put my hands up and say I've been proven wrong. I genuinely didn't think that I would be interested in it because I love the smell, the sounds, the being at the circuit for the real one, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to get motivated or excited about the sim. I was wrong, 100% wrong. It is just so much fun. You've got to go in with it differentiating between the two, but as soon as you kind of take them in the way that they are, it just is so captivating and so much fun. And you look at it, we have people watching this stream going out on Facebook, commenting, and I interact with all the comments and stuff like that as we're going. You know, again, something that I'm a real believer on in both the real world and the e-world. But they are there. You know, we had several people go, oh, great, my Sunday evening staple. And it's like, yeah, it's entertainment. And you know that that's my motto with Real World, is that it's entertainment as much as it is a sport. And this sim racing being broadcast onto our social platforms with commentary, with a sort of a backstory, with an understanding of who am I watching, what have they done so far, what does this mean, and what do these people that I'm just seeing out in an e-car, and bring in the fact that they're sat somewhere in this country on a rig that they've invested in. And this person's actually trying to do this at the moment with no force feedback steering wheel, so the challenge they've got is different to the others. You know, and you just bring all these subplots to light, and people sit there and go, this is cool entertainment. And we had them watching this and commenting, and I just think that that's wonderful.
It is, and the other thing that's wonderful, mate, is hearing the passion in your voice when you're talking about it as well, because, you know, it is... it's so much more than just, oh, it's just pixels on a screen. There's so much more to it. Like I said, there's so many extra sort of stories and stuff behind the scenes that make it such an exciting sport to be part of.
And you must be bordering on relief. Sorry, Matt, you must be bordering on relieved as well, because there was almost a concern that the pandemic caused a heyday in sim racing, because that was all we had for a while, and there was a worry that it was going to go up and then go back down again. It hasn't.
It has stuck really high. That's the
hasn't way. It? Like,
it's carried on. And yeah. one thing I've been really happy that you've said as well, Chris, is the about all the different storylines and this, that, and the other in a singular esport race is with people that do esports, is that 90% of us, as in like me, Matt, whatever, we will never be racing drivers. We can't afford it. We don't have the time, the skills, or whatever to do it. But this is our like window to become a racing driver to do that. Mm-hmm. So we are so passionate at this 1 or 2 hours a week or a month sometimes with some people, that this is where we suddenly become our idols, our this, that, and the other. And do you know what I mean? That whole, and then we get to just be this alter ego of what we want to be, if that makes sense. Of we want to go to Castle Coombe every other week or whatever to do this championship, but we can because we can just log in and do it.
Well, what don't forget is that, I mean, I think back to relatively early in my commentary career, my best mate came with me to, I'm pretty sure it was Brands Hatch, and he turned around and said to me, he said, I don't know how you make every driver sound as famous as Michael Schumacher, which also gives us an insight of how long ago it was. But, you know, I turn around and go, well, that's my job. That's what I do. I try and find backstories to these people, and it is. So what you're saying about you jumping into, you know, these e-races, these sim races, and saying, yeah, we get our moment where we sort of got someone giving us a backstory, giving us a persona. It's like, well, how is that any different to club racing?
Exactly. Exactly that. Like, we put weeks in, like, Matt can back me up on this, how much, like, weeks that we spend doing prep for our endurance races and all this, that, and the other, like, just to get 3 or 4 mile an hour faster down the Mulsanne Strait at Le Mans and everything. But it's the exact same as what, how much preparation you put in for a club meet or even a top flight races and things like that. So I'm really, happy that you've highlighted that as well.
No, and that's cool, because that means I was doing something right, because, you know, it literally was, is that the club racer, you could turn around and go, yeah, but they're not racing in, even if we take national British GT or British touring cars, or they're not doing international racing. It's like, well, so? That we give them that moment where, for that race, they are all superstars. And, you know, I love it that I get family members of drivers in club races that come up to me and go, oh my God, you know, it'd be the driver will come up and say, oh my God, my mum, my dad, my brother, my sister, my wife, my girlfriend, my husband, my boyfriend, whatever it is, they were telling me that you were saying this, you were talking about that, blah, blah, blah. And it's like going, well, isn't that what I'm supposed to do? But they absolutely love it. So it's no different to a club racer getting that moment in the light as though they're this pro-level driver. Same for me. It's the same as the sim races. It's like, hey, this is entertainment. We want to watch this and understand. I always remember me, and you'll relate to this, Matt, I always remember me as the youngster sat on the spectator banks at Castlecombe. And if when the cars are going past at that age, or that, it might not be an age, it might be that I've not been going for ages, that you go, well, I don't really know what that car is. I don't know who that driver really is. There's a name there, but it doesn't mean anything to me. And all I'm seeing, if I'm lucky, is a helmet within a car whipping past. But when my belief is like, right, what did I want to know when I was that youngster or that teenager or that young adult on the spectator bank? And it's like, well, who is that? What does this actually mean if they get past this driver? What is the backstory here? What is the soap opera story here? What does this person do for a living when they're not out there on the circuit? And I, with everything I do, I always try to bring those stories, those subplots, those personalities. Hell, it's been known that if there is no subplot, I'll blooming create one, for crying out loud. It's fine.
Yeah, 100%. I just said none of it's libelous, and that's the main thing.
No, oh yeah, I'll always play it safe. I'll always play it safe. You know, there's no problem there.
Chris, that's absolutely epic. Thank you ever so much for joining us, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure to catch up, and you know, we'll make sure we keep plugging the Coupe series, because it's been awesome. It has been awesome to watch, and hopefully I'll get up to Coombe at some point as well.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to see where else I'm commentating, go to Chris Dawes, Dawes, comms, as in C-O, M for mother, S, .co.uk, chrisdawescomms.co.uk, and you can go to 2024 schedule and you'll see. I tried to go a bit quieter this year, but it hasn't happened. I'm still absolutely stacked out, but it includes British GT, GT Cup, American Speed Fest, one of my favourite events of the year.
Are you going to go to Super Touring Power by any chance, or is that Clash with?
I am. Nope. By request, I am there for that one as well.
I will see you there.
In fact, I'm at Donington Park Easter weekend as well, when the Classic Touring Car Racing Club are there, which includes the Super Touring Cars going around the Donington Park circuit as well. So, yep. And intrigued. I don't think the Super Tourers are there, but I'm there for Classic Touring Car Racing Club at Cadwell Park. But can you imagine some of the cars on the bill of Classic Touring Car Racing Club going around the Cadwell Park circuit. It's going to be amazing. So very varied yet again, and I can't wait to get it started now.
Awesome. Well, hopefully I shall see you at Brands for Super Touring Power 2.
I'll see you there, mate. You'll have to come up to the commentary box.
I say that is now my 40th birthday celebration. So
is it? Well, you'll definitely have to come up to the commentary box at some point with us, mate. That would be good to see you up there as well.
Awesome, mate. We'll do stick around because we're sort of still sticking with real motorsport a little bit here. Those who've been following us on our social media know that we've been heavily pushing the upcoming. And I'm not going to do the accent because I feel that'd be deeply disrespectful. Potatona is coming up. The fantastic event being put together by Lawrence de Sovsva, one of our favourite sim racing content creators of the moment. Well, actually, for quite a while, to be honest. March the 9th, so this very weekend, Potatona is taking place. I don't know. There's been a couple of things about whether they might be bringing rain into it. We don't know. Might be quite interesting if they do. But for those who don't know, Potatona, they've already raised nearly 9,000 euros to basically help support 8 up-and-coming real-world drivers to get onto the grid in 2024, which I think is a very, very worthy cause, because I think, you know, we've been talking for ages about sim racers getting into real-world motorsport. Now, if sim racers can help fellow up-and-comers onto the actual grid, I think that's a very, very positive thing indeed. The event itself is going to be a 10-hour race at Daytona, funnily enough. The Potatona International Spudway, as we picked up on the official poster.
I love that. I think that is amazing. the artwork. I said this before. The artwork is brilliant.
Yeah.
Have they not got in trouble for that?
Not apparently, no.
Wow.
And it's not exactly been hiding his light under a bushel about it either. It's been absolutely fantastic. There's a 10,000 euros driver prize pool with 25,000 euros worth of viewer prize pool. I mean, so we've been pushing the sort of stuff that you'll be able to pick up. You know, things like an Acetec, La Prima bundle, BDH Bazooka, H1 shifters. I mean, those things are expensive as it is, but they are stupendously good. Steve, that's basically the Quaife one, the Quaife gearbox, sim racing gearbox.
Yeah. Some of the other people that are involved in this are serious, like Coach Dave Academy and all these, that and the other. Like, there are some serious...
Yeah, Will from Motion Media is going to be on as well. So it's absolutely brilliant. GSI are throwing an X29 wheel in there as well. Those who donate over 200 euros in total will be entered into a raffle to win a SimmerCube active pedal. Now, that, for those who know, that active pedal is, well, it's the cost of a rig for most people. So for one pedal, so yeah, that's fair, I would say. Prizes also to be distributed to those taking part as well. So, you know, the fact that SimmerCube's on there is a massive deal, because they are a huge sim racing brand. So that is awesome. I also saw that during the broadcast, Lawrence is hosting. He's going to be joined by various guests, including David Brabham.
Nice. He's a massive sim racing fan. He is.
Yeah, I mean, it's no small name to have involved in your racing event either.
Yeah.
And he's racing in GT Cup this year, isn't he?
Oh, is he? Oh, God, yes,
in,
I did see
in
that.
In the Brabham.
A Brabham in the Brabham. Is it Brabham Square?
When did I see it? I saw that in GT Cup when I last went to Brands to see, well, ostensibly to see Rossi.
It's had a bumpy time, sadly, hasn't it, as a car? But I reckon they've got it sorted. But it sounds unbelievable.
Yes, it is an extremely good-sounding car. It's a 10-hour race, multi-class, 60 grid slots and a live broadcast. 3 and 4 drivers for each entry. 180 drivers expected to participate. We've also got Asetek SimSports CEO Andre Eriksson should be joining Lawrence on the stream as well. Sim Formula Europe Chief Andy Massin and Alex Goldschmidt, who's a motorsport commentator, will be on there as well for various Q. And I'm pretty sure Will Ford's going to be on there too. I think Gamer Muscle is actually racing in it as well. There's a lot of names in there as well. So it is a brilliant, brilliant event. Absolutely awesome to see that so many people have been getting behind it as well. Let's just see. So Lawrence put a post up saying there was a €7,500 target. And they'd had 193 donations. They're at €7,241. That was as of 8:16 yesterday. 2 days ago, if you're listening to this, I don't know, it's actually aired. So, yeah, awesome. Wishing Lawrence the absolute best for that show as well. So, and I'll tell you what, if Lawrence doesn't win Esports Content Creator of the Year, I don't know who does. Just putting it out there. So that's Potatona, which is a pretty big one. Now, it's a sore subject for those of us living in the United Kingdom at the moment. Rain. I don't know about you, Chris, but I've rather had enough of it at the moment.
Yes. At the moment. Yeah.
Yes. But Steve, so rain has finally arrived at in the wonderful world of iRacing, and I think we sort of jokingly said that it's the one thing that everybody's really wanted in iRacing. But we kind of joked that perhaps once it actually arrived, people were going to get a little childish about it and then not want it anymore. But that doesn't seem entirely to have been the case.
Yes and no. Everything I've seen is everyone gone, it's absolutely terrifying. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen is everyone's gone, I'm going to basically race with AI and I'm going to protect my I rating because this is absolutely terrifying. Give it a few weeks and then I think everyone's going to sort of try and get out into the real world of I racing, sim racing. I'll be interested to see if all the top flight esports A do rain racing. I think they'll be forced to. Like sort of they will be biased to have to put a race that's in the rain. And whether the same people that are really, really quick on iRacing are still really, really quick when it is absolutely blowing a hoonie.
I think the thing what I've enjoyed most about it is, and I watched Daniel Morad's couple of videos on this yesterday, actually, and this morning, and so he was basically driving his car, the AMG GT3, at Sebring, a circuit he knows very well, and the fact that he's there saying the puddles are all forming exactly where they form in real life. There's rivers on the circuit exactly where they are in real life. I can take my wet line and it actually works in the exact same way as it does in real life. Says quite a lot, because I think a lot of people, various other sims, will literally put a wet effect on, you know, into the game, graphical effect, and then just turn down the grip across the circuit.
Yeah, so plus 20 seconds.
Yeah, so the fact that iRacing seems to have gone to the length that, and to be honest, I expected nothing less from them, to be honest. The fact that they have gone to that level of detail says a lot. Yes, there's still probably things that need working on. I know some have commented, and to be fair, it's something I used to comment on with WRC games, that the spray doesn't hold in the air long enough. It literally goes up and dissipates. You know, I think we're all sort of, you know, those of us of a certain age who are used to seeing, you know, Formula One cars actually bother to race in the rain. Yes. We'll know full well that, you know,
you cynic.
You know, the
I was front, thinking the same thing.
You know, the front couple of cars will have a reasonable view, and then everyone else behind them can basically see a wall of grey at the end of their nose. That's called reality. And the fact that iRacing does replicate that from certainly the in-car view, but when you're watching the replays, the spray doesn't hold. I suspect that's something that they will...
isn't there a couple of challenges here that's jump out? I mean, point one, that's why it's taken so long to come out into the level that you're talking about here, that they've put that level of detail, is that in this day and age, we have an expectation. We were talking earlier about what we see off track, for goodness sake, as though that's even important, which it shouldn't be to a sim, but we do find it important in this day. So in other words, if it's raining, where are the puddles? Where are the streams? Where's the wet racing line and how does that feel? They've had to go to that level. So that means they've got to experience those circuits in all of those conditions and not just, you know, map it, but actually feel it and create the physics to map that. Then again, take the other side, is that you're saying, for example, yeah, but it was rubbish. The rain went up and it fell down. Well, hang on a minute. If we've got a race in the real world that is too wet, can't happen, you're not going to do that in the sim world where you go, actually, guys, we're not having this sim race because the rain's too hard. So you can't create necessarily the worst case scenario, can you, really? I'm trying to be impartial there. Can you tell?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, what's interesting is that, because I think Daniel did do a portion of a video where he said, and I've turned this up to a level that you simply wouldn't race on in real life, but it's allowing me to manage just about. But he's like kind of like out on his own with a good gap between him and other cars.
Because I guess the reality is you want the handling to be as bad as it would be in that, but not necessarily. You know, the view things, I mean, I don't know, you take fog, we've had race meets where we've just not been able to get going because you can't see from one marshal's post to the next. And of course, that's not just fog, that could be, you know, the water in the air, and you just go, we can't do it. Well, you can't go, actually, guys, we're not doing this race because the conditions are too bad. And everyone go, what are you on about? We can control that. So if they go, right, the conditions are bad enough as they would be in terms of how it feels for the handling of the car, however, we're able to race because we not got the view issues, etc. So it's I don't envy them. Genuinely, I don't envy them.
What would be really interesting, and actually I haven't seen too many videos so far from circuits that have a significant number of trees, so like an Imola, like a Monza, like a Brands, whereby...
Interested in that as well. That's one thing I was thinking.
Because I've seen various videos where they've sped it up and they've shown how the rain comes in, it puddles, it forms, the cars are circulating, they're slowly creating a dry line. The dry line then clears, and then it all dissipates as the sun comes back out. Now, what I haven't seen is, does that happen under the trees? Will it just dissipate like it does everywhere else? Or
I didn't think we were allowed to know what goes on under the trees. It's very private.
Especially in that, what happens in the Brands Hatch midfield stays in the Brands Hatch midfield. But you know, how many times we sort of seen it, particularly like some of the older F1 races as well, they've gone, you know, they've like Hockenheim in the old days, you know, if you had a wet race there, you have a virtually dryish line, dryish circuit in the stadium section where it's nice and open. As soon as they headed out into that forest, the spray comes up, and it doesn't matter if the sun's out or not; it stays there.
It was heartbreaking because was it last year or the year before? I've lost track of time. I was very privileged to be part of the RSL or RLM coverage of the Creventic race over at. Hockenheim, and when we had a bit of downtime, I went wandering round to the memorial up round the other side, and you kind of see where there's the gap between the trees where the circuit used to go. And of course, it's just been allowed to overgrow now. And it's like, there's another one, actually. You say, for example, Prosperity, is that of course you can go sim racing on that old circuit, can't you?
Certainly can.
But it's just been allowed to completely overgrow. It's just gone. It's so sad.
It is, because I mean, that really was I did some laps in that in AMS 2 not too long ago, actually, in the old CLK GT1. because why not?
Yes, and, you do. Yeah.
And it was just beautiful. It's just
so at the same time, you kind of went, yeah, this is probably why it was closed.
Yeah. It's also a little bit, I'm glad I'm not doing this for real.
Yes, exactly.
I'd need my seat emptying. But yeah, sort of round this off, it is a hell of a feature to have, because I also think, going back to sort of, you know, what we've been saying all throughout about, you know, this link between real motorsport and the sim racing world, it's amazing. Sim racing provides an awesome opportunity to be able to train and learn circuits and learn car behavior, but predominantly with the best sims in the dry. Now you're able to learn how these exact same cars and how these exact same circuits operate in the wet, which is something, it's new. It's new for everybody. And rain has always been a fantastic leveler in motorsport, so it'll be very interesting to see whether it does the exact same thing for sim racing.
The biggest thing I've seen or watching and reading about it is that everyone has said a unanimous comment about it, and it's terrifying. That's across the board, no matter who the person putting the video up or writing the everything, whether you've done one lap or 50 laps in it, everyone has gone, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I think that's amazing. Like, well, iRacing is created.
How it should be.
Exactly. iRacing has proper created something, and I'm glad they postponed it and pulled it back, because they probably need to do tweaks to it and whatever. But everyone has said it's terrifying, and that's what it should be.
Perfect. Yep.
And of course, the update for iRacing also includes a couple of pretty awesome circuits. Portimao is in there now, which is one of my favourite circuits at the moment. And I'm struggling to remember what the other one is now, which is really bad, because it's I only now know it as Circuit Marco Simoncelli, but that's not what it's called.
I can't remember, because now
someone's shouting it at the screen.
Yeah,
yeah. You two are in trouble now. You realise that?
Yeah.
Gosh darn it! I've lied. Misano. That's the one I was thinking of. Misano.
Yeah, Misano. That's the one.
Which, let's face it, for the most part, ostensibly is a MotoGP circuit, but happens to be all right for cars as well. So I'm really pleased that those two are in there. And Portimao looks the business. Rain around Portimao, which, as we all know, is not exactly something that is a stranger there.
Imagine that puddling on the downhills.
Do you know a circuit I haven't seen them do it at yet, which it just confounds me? Spa.
I think that's going to come about three or four weeks before the Spa 24-hour special race. And they're going to go, yeah, we've done this. And everyone's just going to go, well, there goes all our prep. Thanks.
Well, they have said,
I mean, that's a lot of circuit, though, to sort of be able to map where everything puddles and streams and everything else, isn't it?
They do have a lot of data, though, for it, because they just watch everyone's videos. They're it's always wet.
Quite frequent. Yeah, agreed.
Any Spa 24-hour race. Like, well, there's a puddle there.
And just as we sort of like get into the closing stages, of course, apart from the other these two as yet undetermined UK circuits to be scanned, they did just casually drop into there that they are finally doing a rescan of Spa in the not too distant as well. So hopefully that'll bring it nicely up to date, because I have been doing turning laps in Le Mans Ultimate. Yes, I'm still playing it, and I have done Spa, and Spa is just awful.
Really?
It's so bad. In the sense that, because the WEC don't have tyre warmers, so in everything else I've ever done, you come out of the pits and you can kind of go into Eau Rouge and Radeon at a reasonable speed and not worry about having a massive accident. Yeah, you can't do that. You need a lap or so before the heat properly gets in and you can sort of turn, really, let alone anything else. So that's not if you're new to Le Mans Ultimate, don't start at Spa. that would be a monumental mistake, and would probably be the one that sees you rage quit. I'd actually recommend Bahrain, bizarrely. That was much easier to start at, and very pretty, weirdly. But there we go. I think there's actually been yet another hot fix for it recently, though I have no details on that. And my phone has died, which is really inconvenient because that has our timer on it. But luckily, I can do two things at once, and I've also kept my eye on another timer, so we're okay. Steve goes, "Oh my god!" in the background.
The two-hour show.
Yeah, how did the other guys get an extra 15 minutes and we didn't, pout?
I know.
but yeah, so massive kudos to the team at iRacing for getting the wet weather out there. It really does look the part. I think the more it develops, we're going to see some fantastic things. It's going to look excellent with some of the bigger presentation, series presentations that happen. Looking forward to seeing if they have wet racing in the IMSA series this year. That will be quite something. Oh, did you guys also see, because we mentioned TCR earlier on, that they've done an official license with iRacing? World TCR whatever governing body TCR is, has done a license with iRacing. So I suspect that's going to be official series and potentially more cars, which would be quite fun.
I'd hope so, because TCR is brilliant. When they actually get a grid out and do things for every time I've seen TCR racing, it's always been like a grid of like ten cars.
I know what we were saying about the TCR at Castle Camino, but what I will say is they are wildly better behaved than the BTCC boys are on circuit, as a rule. And I would quite like to see a few more TCR races with a bigger grid.
Yeah, most of that. For those of you who are wondering, that conversation was before we went live on air.
It was, but I'm just intimating.
Yeah.
but yes, yeah, so for those who weren't paying attention to the back, TCR visited TCR UK visited Castle Coombe 2 years ago.
Yeah, and twice in a row. Yeah, or was it in a row? Certainly twice.
But it was awesome. It was super hot, and I know there was a lot of tire issues. But generally speaking, the driving standards were better than touring cars.
Yeah, I think the first time they were there, it wasn't. But the second time was probably a lot better. You're right. Yeah.
But and I just think the cars at the park.
It drew the crowd, didn't it? I think that's the key point, as you and I know, is that it brought the bumper crowds in, and having commented on them there as well, it was just epic, because Castle Coombe is a very fast circuit, and they were perfect for it.
I was also quite happy to see at that particular meeting, the Civic Cup was there as well, so I was in my element.
Yeah, it was good, definitely, because that's a big grid as well, isn't it?
So, it absolutely was. Anyway, that's enough waxing lyrical about our favourite circuit in the West Country. Dear listener, there was not one mention of Crufts, which is coming up this weekend.
It's the big one.
It's the big one. It is the Le Mans. It is the K9 Le Mans this weekend. We are in the ring on Friday morning, bright and breezy. So
Disappear. I have a gap between being a guest on this show and you've changed completely, Matt Hunter.
You see what I've put up with for over a year.
I do, Steve. Every week. I'm with you.
Every week.
I'm a very proud doggo father now. So what can I say?
Every week I've got to rein it back to like, how do I make this Crufts talk into some form of sim or even motorsport related? Now it's now like Le Mans equivalent.
You've got to learn from me is distracting with the rugby talk for a little bit. That works, so it's fine.
Oh, it used to be shouting squirrel randomly, and that seemed to do the trick. anyway, but that is all we'll do. So suffice it. Thank you very much, Chris, for joining us for this.
Thank you
for this show, Steve. Shut up. I've been Matt Hunter. We will see you in a couple of weeks' time, with or without a Crufts champion. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast, wherever you get your podcasts.